So we saw last time three different opinions about whether the ksav and the language of the Torah are changed. Just very briefly review the opinions. There was one opinion that it changed. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave it in one language, and then it changed. It was initially given in ksav Ivri, and now it's ksav Ashuris, which is, of course, the style of writing that we have until this very day. There was another opinion that says it was initially given actually in Ashuris. Then it got switched to Ivri, and then it got switched back to Ashuris. The third and final opinion is there was no change ever. Nothing ever happened, no change whatsoever. And the language and everything, the Sefer Torah that we see today is a Sefer Torah that always was, always will be, and nothing will ever be changed. Now, the question was, if you remember, there was actually a hint. There was a hint in the Torah that it gets changed. Because if you remember, the Torah calls the Torah Mishneh Torah. Mishneh. Mishneh means like Lecha Mishneh. So there was some type of shinui which was semi-predicted, as it were, completely predicted by the Torah. So that's all fine and well if indeed that you learned that there was, in fact, a shinui. But according to this last opinion, there was no shinui. There was no shinui. Nothing ever happened. So what does that mean, Mishneh Torah? That becomes very difficult to understand now. And the Gemara says, no, it's not difficult. Mishneh Torah doesn't mean that the ksav is going to be changed, but rather this is referring to the halacha that the melech has to have two Sifrei Torah, one of which he always walks around with, the other one is kept at home. How do you know that he always walks around with it? Because it says, and this is what we finished off with, have a look, the first word on the line is Shenema, Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Somet. So Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Somet, I've always placed HaKadosh Baruch Hu in front of me. What is that referring to? So according to this particular opinion, it's referring to the Sefer Torah that the Kohen always had in front of him. So of course, the question must immediately be asked. If you hold that when it says Mishneh, it doesn't mean two Sifrei Torah, but rather it means that the language of the Torah becomes changed. So if that's the case, what does the limud of Shivisi Hashem Renegdi Sovit mean? Have Hashem always in front of me, but that's only good if you learn there was a second Sefer Torah, which was always in front of the king. So the Gemara says, V'idach hai shivisi mai dorish bei, according to the opinion that says actually there were no two Sefer Torah. So what does it mean that Hashem is always in front of you? Is this not referring to a Sefer Torah of the Melech? No. Ahimi boile, that would be required to teach us k'de Rav Chana bar Bizna. What did Rav Chana bar Bizna teach us? The Omar Rav Chana bar Bizna. Omar Rav Shimon Chasida HaMispalel. It's referring to somebody davening. Tzorech she'iroe atzmoi ke'ilu shechino kenegde. That's the way that you have to daven, as if the shechino is right there in front of you. Shenema, as it is written, Shivisi Hashem lenegdi somed. So it turns out that this pasuk, and of course we're very familiar with this pasuk, because this is the way the Shulchan Aruch begins. Shivisi Hashem lenegdi somed. So we learn that Shivisi Hashem means HaKadosh Baruch always has to be in front of you. The Gemara is telling you it means with regard to tefillah. Lakoponim, so it turns out we have a machlokes. Is Shivisi Hashem Negdi Somid a reference to the Kohen's Sefer Torah? The Melech Sefer Torah. Or is it a reference to something else completely? It's actually referring to every person who's davening. That is subject of a machlokes. Now, there is one final question which must be asked. And don't worry, it is asked. We recall, and we've kept on revisiting this, that in the time of Belshazzar, the famous writing on the wall, and we had that posuk, if you look at the very top of the Gemara, go to the top line of the Gemara, it's actually on the second line, and it says, Loi kahalin ksiva lemikraya. Nobody was able to read that writing. So, why was nobody able to read the writing on the wall? So if you go with the previous opinion that there was a change in the ksav from Ivri to Ashuris to Ivri, etc., etc., so we understand that they were totally unfamiliar with the writing on the wall, and for that reason they were unable to read it. However, according to this final opinion, which you just learned now, there was never a change. And if there was never a change, then we don't understand why on earth could they not read the writing on the wall. According to the other opinions, they didn't read it because it was unfamiliar. They were looking at a style of writing that they've never seen before. But if you learn that loy nishtane, that it never got changed, so why on earth were they unable to read the writing on the wall? This is the Gemara's question. So the Gemara says, L'Reb Shimon, according to Reb Shimon, that's Reb Shimon ben Elazar, the Oma who says that Ksav Zeh Loi Nishtane, he says that this writing never got changed. Well, if that's the case, my quote unquote Loi Kahalin Kisva Lemikra, quote unquote. What does that mean? They were unable to read the writing. Why not? Look at Rashi. It's exactly next to these words of the Gemara. Loi nishtane kol ikka. Mashmas. If that's the case, loi nishtakach mehem klal. So obviously it never got forgotten. The language was always with them. The writing style was always with them. The ho'oleo derebi osi laflugi. He's coming to argue with Rebbe. Rebbe was a previous opinion who says it become forgotten, and we're coming to argue with that. So according to this last opinion, nothing was ever forgotten, nothing was ever changed, and if that's the case, umay loy kahalim kisvel mikri. So why couldn't they reach it? Why couldn't they read it? There's nothing strange about it. Nothing was forgotten, nothing was changed. So look in the Gemara, this is quite fascinating. Omar Rav. So Rav says, "Begematria ichtiv lahoin," because it was written in code form. Not that they couldn't read it, meaning they were unfamiliar with the writing style. They were very familiar with the writing style. This is a style that never ever changed. Rather, it was written in gematria. Now, we're fully aware that there are various styles of gematria. So the classic gematria, every letter has numerical value, and that's what it is. But we're also aware that there's something called atbash. Atbash, where the aleph corresponds to the tof, and the base, the second letter, corresponds to the shin, which is the second last, etc., etc., etc. So they're all the aleph bases, as it were, back to front. That's also a form of gematria. Says the Gemara, the message on the wall was written in that type of writing. Meaning, nothing strange about the lettering, nothing strange about the style of writing, but it was written in code. What was it written in? It said, Yatas, Yatas, Idach, Pughamat. What does that mean? It doesn't mean anything. My Porish Lahu. So how must you translate that? So if you flip that all round, Mona, Mona, Tekel, Uparsin. So really, the message on the wall was Mona, Mona, Tekel, Uparsin. And soon the Gemara is going to translate that message. But they didn't realize that because the writing on the wall did not say the words Mona, Mona, Tekel, Uparsin. Rather, what did it say? Yatas, Yatas, etc., etc. So, for example, Mona, the Mem, is the equivalent, if you do it all back to front, of Yud. Nun, which is the letter after the Mem, is corresponding to the Tes, which is the letter before the Yud. And Aleph, which is obviously the very first letter, corresponds to the Tof. That's Yatas, Yatas, etc., etc. So if you work that all out, everybody could do it afterwards at home, Yatas, Yatas, Idach, Pughamat is the equivalent of Mene, Mene, Tekel, Uparsin. So that's what it means that they couldn't read it. Not that they were unable to literally read the words. It means they were unable to understand the words and decode it. Look at Rashi.
Yates.
Yata, says Rashi, Ba'at Bash, in the Gematria, in the form of Gematria called Ba'at Bash, Maniach es Zu, V'kosav Ma'a Shebetzad. You place one letter, and then you actually write what's on the other tzad, I mean on the other side. So if it's an Aleph, that goes with the Tof. In other words, you put it in the mirror, as it were. So B'mokim Mem, Kosav Yud, Hasmuchalot. B'mokim Nun, Kosav Tes, B'mokim Aleph, Kosav Tof, etc., etc., etc. So it turns out that in the final analysis, the message that was written on the wall was Mone Mone Tekelu Parasim. Problem was, it didn't actually appear on the wall like that. How did it appear on the wall? In the form of At Bash. Well, if it appeared in the form of At Bash, that's why nobody could read it properly. Now, what does that message, having now been decoded, what does it actually mean? Says the Gemara. Mona, mona. Mona is obviously from the word moine, which is to count. Or we daven with a minion, a count of people. Mona, mona, quote unquote, Eloko Malchuscho. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is the message, is counting your Malchus, is calculating your Malchus. Let's just remind ourselves, this was coming now to the end of Malchus Bavel. Malchus Bavel, the curtain, was about to come down, as it were, on the Malchus of Bavel, and they were going to now start a whole new Malchus in the world of Modai Uporas. That was the message given to Belshazzar, the king. So, Mone Mone, quote unquote, Eloko, Malchus, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is counting, calculating your Malchus. Takil, that's the next word, quote unquote. Takilta b'moznaya. He has weighed you on a moznaya, which is on a scale. V'hishtakacha chosir, and has found you to be lacking. We've said many times that in Aramaic, if you switch the tof to a shin, so you'll get the exact translation. So if you switch the tof to a shin, it's instead of takel, it's shokel, like mishkal, the weight. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu has weighed you, has firstly calculated, has also weighed you, in other words, has inspected you, Belshazzar, and has found you lacking. And that's why your malchus is about to come to an end. And the final word, Vishtakha Chosir, Uparasin, Parista Malchuscha, your Malchus is being now scattered, the Yohivus, and is going to be given Lamodai Uparas. So that's what it means again. Mone, mone, tekel Uparasin means your Malchus is being counted, you've been weighed. Uparasin is going to be dispersed, it's going to be spread elsewhere. The Malchus of Bavel is now all over. We're beginning a new chapter in history, and it's going to now be Modai Uparas. So that's the translation of the words Mone Mone Tekel Uparasin. But as mentioned, those were not the words that appeared on the wall. It was written back to front in At Bash, and that's why nobody was able to read it. Ushmuel Omar, Shmuel says something different. Shmuel says it's a similar type of teretz. He agrees that the words Mone Mone Tekelu Parasin were not the words that appeared on the wall. And that's why they could not read it. So what was written on the wall? So Shmuel suggests it was not At Bash. Rather, Shmuel Omar, Mamtus Nanakfi Aalron. Has anybody managed to decode that? Look at the first.
Yeah, let's go.
Right. If you look at the first letter, Mem. Now look at the first letter of the second word, Nun, and then of the third word, it's Aleph. That's Mona. Do that with all the second letters and then the third letters, the fourth and the fifth, and once again you'll get to Mene mene tekel uparsin. So basically, it was written in three rows. On the top row, it was written the word mamtus. On the second was written nanakfi. And on the third row underneath was written a'alrin, such that you now had three rows of five letters each, five columns. That's 15 letters altogether. So if you would read the first column going from top to bottom, it would say mona. Next one, again, mona. Next one, tekel. The next one, uporas, uparsin, altogether. So again, that's why, this is Shmuel's understanding, that's why they were unable to decode it. Not because the writing style was different, it was exactly the same ksav as ever, but rather because it was written on the wall, mamtus nanakfi alron, they had no idea what that meant. Final opinion, Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Rabbi Yochanan says something else completely. It actually said something else. Anom lekes nisrapu. This is not the final opinion. This is the second last opinion. Again, very strange words. How must you decode that? Well, it's quite simple. You just turn the word back to front. So anom is mona. Anom is mana. Mana lekes is tekel. Nisrapu is uparsin. But again, they didn't know how to decode that. And a final opinion, Rav Ashi Yoma, neme ketel poirsin. Also strange words, but actually it's the easiest to decode because all you have to do is just switch around the first two letters. So neme becomes mene, ketel becomes tekel, poirsin becomes uparsin. Have a look quickly at Rashi, the last Rashi before the Mishnah. Uparasin, sorry, the second last Rashi, Uparasin. Now, Uparasin clearly is Loshen Rabim, it's the plural, Uparasin. So why does it say Loshen Rabim? Says Rashi, Shtei Prisois Mashma. If it says in Loshen Rabim in the plural version, then clearly it's Shtei Prisois, it's twice that something's happening. Why is that? Firstly, Vezuhi, Prisas, underline the word, Prisas malchusoi. So the first version, if it's in the plural, it's mashma, there's twice. Prisas means it's scattering. But who's it being given to? Viohivos lamodai uporas. Underline the word uporas. So that's why it says uparsin in the plural, because it really actually does have double meaning. The first translation of uparas means it's scattering, it's being dispersed. Belshazzar's Malchus of Babel is going to be dispersed, but it has another meaning. Who is it going to? It's going to Poras, Persia. The final Rashi, Mamtus Nunakfi A'alron, says Rashi, Osa Sholosh Tevois, Shel Chomesh Oisiois. It was written as three words of five letters each. So you write one row of five, a second row of five, and then on the bottom row, another word of five. You now have to combine the first letters of each word. So it's the mem, it's the nun, and the aleph. And that's how you make one complete word. And then you take all the second letters. And then the shlishios, all the thirds, and then the fourth and the fifth, and so on and so forth. So it turns out that altogether we have four different answers, but really it's one answer. Again, according to the earlier opinions in the Gemara that the Ksav changed, well, then it's very simple. That's why they could not read the writing on the wall, because it was a familiar, unfamiliar writing style. From Ashuris to Ivri Ashuris, they simply could not read the letters. But according to this final opinion of Rav Shimon, that the writing never changed. So what does it mean they couldn't understand it? The answer is they couldn't decode it. Not that they couldn't read it. Why couldn't they decode it? So we've had four versions because it was written in code. Either it was written in Atbash, Yatus Yatus, that was the first opinion, or it was written in Mamtus, etc., etc., three different words, and you've got to read the columns. Or it was written absolutely backwards, Anam is Mena. Or finally, it was written as Nama, you've got to switch around the first two letters. So really, it's all one type of Torah. So it was written in code, they could not decode it. But the actual writing style, there was nothing strange about that, and that they were able to read. And that is the end of the sugya. So I see that we have 4 minutes left. Let's not waste time. Let's immediately begin with the next mission. Ein roichvin al susay. We're continuing now with the halachas of the melech. It is an issa to ride the horse of the king. Clearly that's disrespectful. Ve'ein yoishvin al kisay. One should not sit on his throne. Ve'ein mishtamshin b'sharvitay. And you're not allowed to use his scepter. Ve'ein royin oisoy kishuhu mistapir. One should not look at him whilst he's taking a haircut. V'loy kishuhu orum, and not whilst he is unclothed. V'loy kishuhu bebeis hamerchatz, and neither when he's in the beis hamerchatz, maybe even if he's not orum. Shenema, where are all of these halachas learned from? Because it says in the pasuk, we've had this before. Soim tosim olecha melech, quote unquote. You shall place upon yourselves a king. Now, what is the word that l'chayra is superfluous there? The superfluous word would seem to be olecha. Why would it not have sufficed simply to write soim tosim melech? You must appoint a king. If it says olecha upon you, so we make a drasha. What's the drasha? Shetehei emosoi olecha. That his fear should be upon you. It's not good enough to appoint a king. You have to appoint a king whose fear, whose awe, Emo is awe, whose awe is upon you. And that's where we learn that all of these halachas cannot therefore be compromised, because if you see the king taking a haircut or you ride his horse, etc., etc., then that's not emosoi olecha. Then the awe of the king is not upon you, just viewing him as another a peer of yours. Therefore, because we have this extra word olecha, shetei emosoi olecha, that's how we learn that this special halachas of covered for the melech. Yeah, Reb Larry.
Because it's difficult for a human being to understand what it means that Hashem is HaMelech, so when you have all these laws of awe and this and this and this of the Melech Yisrael, is this Hashem's way of showing us, if I will expect it of you, I want you now to make a connection of what it means to Melech Malchei HaMelechim. Like,
the Gemara does say that the Malchus in Shomayim parallels the Malchus down here on earth, and therefore there is a parallel, quite right. It was definitely noted, nothing is coincidence, that this, not this past year, but the year before, just before Rosh Hashanah in England, the Queen of England died, and there was a mass funeral, which I think was flashed across the world, and the parade and the display of Malchus was a very, very timely message just before Rosh Hashanah. Soldiers and the covered, etc. So there was to a Melech Boss of Adom, who basically had zero power. So culture came 1,000,000,000,000,000,000 times to the Melech Malchim Lochim. Absolutely right. Okay, we're going to hold it over here. Mitzvah Hashem, we're going to resume tomorrow, all being well.